In August 1925, a young West Australian woman, Audrey Jacob, shot dead her former fiancé, Cyril Gidley, in full view of hundreds of guests at a charity ball in Perth's Government House. When she was arrested, she still held the gun in her hand. It was an open and shut case of willful murder. Or was it? Dr. Lee Straw, writer, historian and senior lecturer at the University of Notre Dame, has just released her latest book, The Ballroom Murder. G'day, Lee.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. From the opening pages of The Ballroom Murder, I was fascinated by this story. It seems, even though I didn't know anything about this story, it should have been a simple case to prosecute. What happened next?
Yeah, well, that's the thing that intrigues us all these decades later, is that the police and the prosecution thought this is, as you say, was an open and shut case. Audrey is on the dance floor. She still has the weapon in her hand. There's a young man who is dying on the floor at that moment, who's whisked away into the cloakroom. So it seems pretty straightforward that the police have their culprit, they have the perpetrator, and so it'll go to inquest and then likely to a trial, and from there it should be pretty straightforward. But it wasn't straightforward, because Audrey ended up having the help of a very good lawyer. And so the lawyer managed to create a very different situation to what the police had expected.
The population of Perth in 1925 was around 100,000, is that right?
It was quite small, yeah. We sort of reflect on it, the fact that it was a pretty much a large country town by comparison to the larger cities of Melbourne and Sydney. But it certainly was a place that was becoming more metropolitan, mm-hmm. and it was becoming a bigger city at the time, but it was still a little behind the other major cities.
Yeah, it was still the sleepy capital city, the Wild West. Was there more than one newspaper in town?
There was a few newspapers about the place. There was a lot of great local papers, and you had papers that serviced Fremantle or Perth or other parts. But there certainly were the leading newspapers who drew in a lot of readers, and certainly for their sensational stories. So the Mirror newspaper was very popular. Truth was a scandal sheet that became popular in the 1920s. And so you did have a couple of these leading papers. And, of course, we've got the West Australian itself has been around for a very long time in WA.
So, Lee, tell us about the influence of, and it wasn't media then, it was the press. Tell us about the influence of the press and its interaction with the legal system back in 1925.
The stories that go around are that the editors of the newspapers had a real in with a number of lawyers, and Audrey Jacob's lawyer, Arthur Haynes, was known to go down to the newspaper building for the Mirror, and he would meet with the editor and have discussions about cases and major cases that he might be able to feed a little bit of information to the press, and then they could maybe perhaps assist in the public opinion around his cases. So there was very close relationships were developed between lawyers and newspaper folk, but the same can be said of even police officers as well. You know, the police and the press back then, they used each other as they wanted to, and that certainly comes through in the archives.
So how big a deal? Let's go back to the beginning, Lee, and talk about having this fabulous ball where everyone's in costume or in formal wear, and a young woman who's only 20 is in the middle of this environment, the St. John of God's annual ball. What was that social scene like then?
Well, that social scene that she becomes a part of that evening with one of her friends it's in Government House. It's in a place that the annual ball takes place, and it's for the community to raise money for charities. And it gathered together a whole number of different people from across Perth society. And at the same time, this is 1925. So you also have young women like Audrey who are turning up at the ball, and they're looking for a good time. They're looking to have fun with friends, to go for a dance, and maybe to meet a nice young man. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those balls that really brought together a number of different people in Perth society. And the St. John of God ball has continued on in that great tradition since.
Like your previous book, The Petticoat Parade, Madame Monnier and the Rowe Street Brothels, it is more than just a story of an individual, in this case Audrey Jacob, and the court case. It's about the social history of the time. What makes us so interested 100 years later in digging into these stories in the 21st century?
I think we're intrigued by these kinds of stories because, I mean, at one level, the 1920s is enduringly fascinating because of all the popular culture associated with it. So it's already a really interesting period. But we're drawn back into these stories because we want to see what that past was like, and we want to imagine, is it the same as what we've got now? How different is it? Who are the people that made up our societies back then? And what I love doing is really delving into the context around these stories, because they don't happen. This ballroom shooting didn't happen in isolation. It's got the whole context of Perth around it at the time. And it was a very conservative place. And so for a young woman to turn up and shoot her ex-lover dead on the dance floor, that was a huge scandal at the time.
I can imagine it would be today. How come I didn't grow up knowing about Audrey Jacob?
Yeah, look, a few people do. It's one of those stories that kind of gets picked up, and I've heard a few people talk about it over the years, but it hasn't featured as much as it should have, because in terms of Australian history, quite often our perspective is pushed towards looking at crime stories, not necessarily in WA, not necessarily in Perth. We're drawn into organised crime stories in Sydney and Melbourne, and, you know, I'm a part of that. You know, I've written about organised crime in those places. But, in fact, in our own backyard, we've got some really interesting stories. But I think it was certainly a sensational story at the time and in the months afterwards. But it was almost like, you know, once this was all over, people kind of went back to their own lives. There's other things to do. And certainly Audrey's family wanted to be left to their own devices and their privacy respected at the time. And so I think there's a lot of where this happened. It was very scandalous. But at the same time, this is a real family. There are other members of that family. Mm. Audrey had brothers and sisters. And so not many people want to really talk about this because of the, you know, the truly horrific nature of the case.
And there was a lot to do with the family that informs this case. You'll have to read the book to find out all the details. Before she left Western Australia and went over to Victoria and beyond, as it turns out, she authored something in the Mirror. They had an exclusive. It was 6 weeks in the shadows of the gallows. Is it too cheesy to say it was ghostwritten?
I think we'd have to really take that seriously, you know, because you're dealing with a newspaper fight with reporters who had recognised that this was a big story and they were using it in that manner, and they're really playing into the interest, that the sensational side of it, but the public had this this joy of transgression interest in this story, this crime story. And so you certainly get a feel with the article that it's not all Audrey's voice. It's certainly been something that's been helped by somebody in the press.
And even her conversion to religion, it's difficult to have a finality of truth in some of these stories and the context. Where have you dug up your information from?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting story because it's really subject to interpretation, and that's what we find when you professionally study the past. And as a historian, we have different interpretations to each other. So you can give us the same evidence, the same records of the past, and different historians will have different interpretations of that. And this case, I think, is a perfect example of that. The archives can only tell us so much. So we've only got the evidence that's been left, inquest, trial records, the records that were left by Audrey's lawyer, which, of course, he's leaving records that he wants to leave. You know, that element of the story. There's the newspaper records. The newspaper stories were fantastic, because they really brought to life just how sensational this case was in 1925. But there's always the gaps. There's always the gaps in the evidence of the past. And the reality is that only two people really know what happened, and they are Audrey Jacob and Cyril Gidley. And Cyril was already dead in 1925 at the ball. So there's a number of questions that remain around this case, which I think is why it makes it so fascinating.